culture to politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day despite the fact that it looks like we all may have a great problem this summer. A gasoline shortage. No, really? Well, CNN says so. That certainly would not be good news for the Biden administration, which has its big night tonight. The President of the United States speaking to a joint session of Congress. In his first year, any president does not get to give a State of the Union because he's just become president. But it is usual for a President of the United States in his first couple of weeks as president to address a joint session of Congress. Obama did so, demanding that Congress fund his stimulus package, which Joe Biden at the time was supposed to be in charge of. That didn't end up doing anything close to what it was supposed to do for the economy. They say, well, that's because we didn't get to spend enough because those mean, rascally Republicans prevented us. Well, they're certainly spending enough this time. And there is a Democrat who says, very smart Democrat, universally respected for his political acumen, who says that Joe Biden is potentially in trouble. His approval rating as of this morning, 53%. Now, it's higher than it was for Trump, but it's lower than it was for every other recent president. What's the problem? James Carville says the problem is language. And the way that the language that Democrats use puts them out of touch with the mainstream of America. Speaking of the mainstream of America, the Republicans made an excellent decision, and good on Mitch McConnell for taking care of this. Mitch McConnell being the closest thing we have to someone in Congress who's in a leadership position, because Mitch McConnell controls 50 U.S. senators, the same number as Chuck Schumer. It's just Chuck Schumer has the vice president of the United States sitting over his shoulder to be part of the extra vote that the Democrats need for much of their agenda. But Mitch McConnell selected Tim Scott, the great senator from South Carolina, who, by the way, was partially selected because he tried very hard to put forward a reform bill regarding police reform and police practices that would have been vastly better than what is working its way through Congress now. And you know who says so? The police chief of Detroit. But Tim Scott is going to be speaking tonight. What should he say in response to President Biden? And what is the essence in the problems that the Democrats are facing? There's also a column today that says, hey, this is a great day of this greatest nation on God's green earth because race relations in America are better than ever. So why is it that people on the Democratic side of things are so deeply committed to preventing any kind of acknowledgement that race relations are better than ever? It has to do with political survival, and we will get to that. Also, of course, everybody's probably heard a little bit about Rudy Giuliani's apartment being raided today by the Justice Department, part of an investigation, apparently, of what Rudy was doing exactly in the Ukraine for several years and some of his business relationships. Remember, with Igor Fruman and Lev Parnas, two Russian and Ukrainian nationals. And they are both, they've pleaded guilty. I believe they both have pleaded guilty. They may be cooperating with prosecutors. And who knows what happens with former Mayor Giuliani. He is going to be issuing a statement coming up. We will bring that to you just as quickly as we can. Let me go first, because particularly on a day when there is a great deal of attention on this first major speech of the Biden presidency since the inaugural address. And Joe Biden could actually begin to fulfill his greatest, most central unfulfilled promise so far, which is the promise of working in a bipartisan way and bringing us together and accelerating national unity. And he has not done that. Even his own party would agree that he hasn't. Even those people who think he's been a great and activist president, there's been very little that he has done so far that could be described as especially unifying. One of the things he could do, it's a small thing, but it would count for a lot, and it's something he should have done weeks ago, is to acknowledge even a little bit President Trump's role in developing those vaccines that have changed all our lives for the better. If there is one undoubted, non-controversial, big success of the Trump administration, it was Operation Warp Speed. And there are some hints, at least, that Biden might maybe say something about that, at least mention a name. It would get immediate applause from both sides of the chamber, and it would be the right thing to do. So why not? And why not pay attention to the raging Cajun? That would be James Carville. Carville, of course, famous for being the one who coined the phrase, it's the economy, stupid. He was the brains behind the first Clinton campaign, which unseated a once very popular incumbent president, George Herbert Walker Bush. And James Carville, partisan Democrat, I recently have just finished a column where I kind of attack something that he wrote back in 2009, 12 years ago. And what he wrote in 2009 was a book called 40 More Years, and it was about a permanent Democratic takeover. And he is now recognizing that, no, there is not going to be a permanent permanent Democratic takeover, and he's acknowledging why. And he was doing an interview with Vox, and I haven't been able to get an audio copy of the interview, but it's a fascinating exchange. And it began with Sean Illing of Vox asking Carville, what do you make of Biden's first 100 days? Kind of the question of the moment. And Carville says, honestly, if we're just talking about Biden, it's very difficult to find something to complain about. And to me, his biggest attribute is that he's not into faculty lounge politics. Yeah, and then Sean Illing says, faculty lounge politics? Question mark. He says, you ever get the sense that people in faculty lounges and fancy colleges use a different language than ordinary people? They come up with a word like Latinx that nobody else uses. Or they use a phrase like communities of color. I don't know anybody who speaks like that. I don't know anybody who lives in a community of color. I know lots of white and black and brown people, and they all live in neighborhoods. And then he goes on, and he says, we have to talk about race. We should talk about racial injustice. What I'm saying is we need to do it without using jargony language that's unrecognizable to most people, including most black people, by the way, because it signals that you're trying to talk around them. This too cool for school S word doesn't work, and we have to stop it. There may be a group within the Democratic Party that likes this stuff, but it ain't the majority. And beyond that, if Democrats want power, they have to win in a country where 18% of the population controls 52% of the Senate seats. That's a fact. That's not changing. That's what this whole damn thing is about. That's slightly exaggerated, but he's right, of course, because small states each get two senators, even states with only one congressman. They get two senators because that's the way the Constitution set it up. And what James Carville is recognizing is it's not enough to do a big speech tonight that's going to please MSNBC and CNN. President Biden has to connect with the American people, or not. What is that going to mean in terms of Tim Scott's response and more? We'll be right back. Michael Medved Show, James Carville is one Democrat I guess because he's not really active as a political consultant right now. He's more of a commentator. I suspect he's working on a new book, but he's entirely correct. He said in an interview that wokeness is a problem, and everybody knows it. It's hard to talk to anybody today, and I talk to lots of people in the Democratic Party who doesn't say this, but they don't want to say it out loud because they'll get clobbered or they'll get canceled. Doesn't Carville sound a little bit about like a Republican, really, or a conservative? He's not. He's just an American. And he's right about this. Yeah, they don't want to say anything about it. They want to say it out loud because they'll get clobbered or canceled. And look, part of the problem is that lots of Democrats, James Carville says, will say that we have to listen to everybody and we have to include every perspective, or that we don't have to run a ruthless messaging campaign. Well, you kind of do. It really matters. And part of that ruthless messaging campaign is going to be to distance this party from that world of political correctness and that world of wokeness. And I'll tell you something, honest to goodness, that Biden could do tonight that would make a big difference. He could talk about looking forward to the 4th of July and looking forward to having hamburgers. Yes, real hamburgers, meat hamburgers on the 4th of July. There's a piece in the Washington Post today about Epicurus. Okay, let me tell you, I don't cook. My wife loves to cook, thank God, and she's a wonderful cook, and she makes big meals now. Again, we're able to have Sabbath guests, thank you to the vaccine. In any event, Epicurus is dropping beef recipes, citing the role of cows in climate change. Okay, the idea of being forced to give up meat, hamburgers and lamb chops and steak Diane or anything you want to eat. Now, I've admitted it on the show before. I choose not to eat meat, but I don't want the government mandating that. And I love it that my friends and family and that there are other people who do eat meat. And that's fine. Why can't you leave it alone? This is crazy stuff. And right now, especially since Joe Biden's already been mocked about this on Fox News and elsewhere, about the idea that his climate change package is going to involve some kind of limitation on the number of hamburgers you can have per year. Make it clear that that's not true, Mr. President, and it better not be true, because if it is true, you're going to get whacked on this. The American people love to eat meat. And again, the idea that it's the government's job to monitor what it is that every family eats or barbecues for the 4th of July is just wrong. A beef was already the red-hot topic du jour this week, writes the Washington Post, when food website Epicurious made more meaty news. It would no longer publish recipes using beef, citing the environmental harm caused by cattle farming. Maggie Hoffman, who's the senior editor, and the former digital director, David Tamarkin, wrote in a post explaining the decision, quote, "Our shift is solely about sustainability, about not giving airtime to one of the world's worst climate offenders." Okay, honest to goodness, do you really think this is going to make a change in the climate? The fact that Epicurious, which is a website I had never heard of, that Epicurious now doesn't run meat recipes? It's just annoying. It's not a threat. And again, the president could make fun of it. The shift means no new recipes for filet or stroganoff, classic carpaccio or faithful meatloaf, or on the homepage. No brisket, no ribeye, no sirloin. Doesn't make you hungry. No sirloin flank or any of the other primal cuts on the site's Instagram feed. expect to substitute mushrooms in the cheese steaks, seitan for the French dip, and tofu for stews, and chicken for lo mein. Now, chicken, of course, has its own problems, but apparently not as much in terms of the environment, so people say, as beef. There's an angry response, of course, to Epicurious. Mr. President, you could make fun of that. Any other idea about what he should say? Mitch McConnell has his idea. And he was actually, I think, spot on in targeting some of the shortcomings of the Biden administration so far. This is the Senate Minority Leader, Senator McConnell of Kentucky. This is clip 10.
The American people elected a 50-50 Senate, a closely divided House, and a president who preached moderation. He promised that his whole soul was committed to uniting our people. Many hoped his administration would reflect that promise, but the first 100 days have left much to be desired. Over a few short months, the Biden administration seems to have given up on selling actual unity in favor of catnip for their liberal base, covered with a hefty coat of false advertising.
And it's false advertising and huge deficit spending. Look, President Biden is apparently going to speak tonight about universal pre-K. And that might be popular. Look, pre-K, basically extending the school experience down earlier, is going to have a lot of public support. But the idea of paying for it is something the Democrats have just forgotten about. And McConnell made the same point. Listen to 10B.
That's how the so-called American Rescue Plan, a grab bag bill that directed less than 10% to vaccines and pandemic health care, was marketed as a COVID-19 relief measure. In actuality, it sent sums of money to state governments whose revenues had already rebounded, and declared war on the formerly bipartisan consensus that welfare spending should actually be linked to work. Or take H.R. 1, the sweeping effort by Democrats to mount a partisan takeover of all 50 states' voting laws, along with the Federal Election Commission, for good measure. After a Republican won the White House in 2016, this was billed as a massive overhaul for a broken democracy.
Okay, the point that he's making is solid. And the James Carville has something to say about just how solid it is. He says, Republicans are going to call us socialists no matter what. So let's just run as out and out socialists. That's not the smartest thing to do. Why not? Tell ya, coming up on the MedVet Show. Michael Medved show, Democrats seem to be riding high. They shouldn't be riding quite so high. Who says so? James Carville. And there is so much in his interview, the interview he did with Vox, and it's going to get him in trouble with some members of his own party. But it's profoundly correct. And on point after point after point, he says, the interviewer who's talking to Carville says, hold on, you're being so critical of the Democrats. And Sean Illing, the interviewer, says, if you're a Democrat, you could look at the state of play and say, hey, we're winning. We won the White House. We won Congress. We have power. It ain't perfect, but it ain't a disaster either. And Carville says this. He says, yeah, we won the White House, Carville says, against a world's historical buffoon. Okay, tell us how you really feel about President Trump. We know how he feels about President Trump. He says, and we came within 42,000 votes of losing to him. We lost congressional seats. We didn't pick up state legislatures. So let's not have an argument about whether or not we're off key in our messaging. We are. We're way off key. And we're off because there's too much jargon and there's too much esoterica, and it turns people off. He says, look at Florida. You now have Democrats saying Florida's a lost cause. But maybe the problem is there's nothing wrong with the state of Florida. The problem is the kind of campaigns we've been running. In Miami-Dade, all we talked about was defunding the police. And Kamala Harris was, the Republicans talked about, being the most liberal senator in the U.S. Senate. And if you look all across the Rio Grande Valley, we lost all kinds of solidly blue voters, says James Carville. And the faculty lounge BS is a big part of it. And this is a moment where obviously the Democratic Party has to look at itself and understand it can either be a party that wants to win in elections, or it can be a party of political correctness. Political correctness and cancel culture, not popular. And here's a last thing that Carville said that I think is very important to understand. He said, first of all, it's a 50-50 Senate. And that means that the Democrats need all 50 Democratic votes to do anything. Because they're not going to get Republican votes, has been shown time and again. And he says, first of all, this is James Carville talking, the Democratic Party cannot be more liberal than Senator Joe Manchin. That means it is a waste of time. And it is destructive for the country and destructive for the Democratic Party, and a great opportunity, frankly, for Republicans when they spend time on reparations, when they spend time on statehood for Washington, D.C. I'd been wondering, why did they drop talking about statehood for Puerto Rico? Part of the reason is Puerto Rico has been a train wreck. Puerto Rico in the last 10 years lost more population as a percentage. They lost 11.28% of their population in 10 years. It's much worse than other states that lost population. Mississippi lost some population. West Virginia lost population, lost a congressional seat. But Puerto Rico, this is not the good time with that news just being there to go out and to make a new crusade for statehood for Puerto Rico. That's not the kind of thing that Democrats are going to be spending their time on. I don't think we'll hear anything about that from President Biden tonight, but we shall see. The example of what Carville is talking about, particularly the way that Democrats are allowed to talk about race. There was a moment in the Louisiana legislature. They were doing a hearing on a bill that had been introduced by a conservative Republican member of the Indiana legislature, and it was a bill to basically ban the teaching of critical race theory in the state of Louisiana. And what happened was there were two Republicans, because the legislature in Louisiana is heavily Republican, who were arguing about this plan, and the advocate for the plan was saying, look, he doesn't want to teach propaganda. He wants people to teach facts and to learn facts, which is appropriate. And but then he made a comment about slavery, and listen to the way the legislature reacted. The Garofalo, who is the representative who was pushing the plan to eliminate critical race theory, is actually being questioned by a fellow Republican, Representative Stephanie Hilferty. Listen.
If you're having a discussion on a discussion. on whatever the case may be, on slavery, then you can talk about everything dealing with slavery, the good, the bad, the ugly.
There's no good to slavery, though.
Well, then whatever the case may be, you're right. You're right. I didn't mean to imply that, and that I don't believe that, and I know that that's the case.
Okay, now they're saying that this is the end of his career, and the chances for his bill have been confronted. It's an outrageous thing to say. You can't say about slavery or the Armenian genocide or the Holocaust, we're going to take a look at the good, the bad, and the ugly. But the idea that the very notion of banning critical race theory is now dropped because of that ridiculous comment by Representative Garofalo. It's part of what Carville's talking about. We'll be right back, right? There was, in advance of Biden's speech tonight, there was also a comment from Senator John Barrasso. That would be Dr. John Barrasso. He's one of the people who participated yesterday in that fine public service announcement on behalf of everybody getting vaccinated, if you possibly can, if you can bring yourself to do it. Senator Barrasso did a press conference yesterday and talked about why he doesn't look forward so eagerly to President Biden's appearance before a joint session tonight. Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming.
Well, tomorrow night when the president addresses the nation, he usually stands behind the seal of the president. But it really ought to say tomorrow is not seal of the president. It should say sold out to progressives, because that's what President Biden has done in his first 100 days of office. We saw it first with the so-called coronavirus bill, where, in fact, he borrowed trillions of dollars and used it for all sorts of things completely unrelated to the disease and the medical treatment of coronavirus. Now the president is promoting another big spending bill under the guise of infrastructure, where only 6% of the money goes for roads and bridges, and there's more money for electric vehicles than there is for roads, bridges, highways, ports, airports, and waterways combined.
Okay, those are real problems, and obviously spending is a gigantic vulnerability. I suspect, at least there are rumors, that President Biden is going to be talking about the new money he wants to spend, a substantial increase of about $80 billion over the next 10 years on the IRS to collect more taxes. Why should that be popular? We will get to that and more on The Medved Show.
This is The Michael Medved Show.
This is totally, completely inappropriate.
On the Michael Medved Show, there will undoubtedly be some talk about race and race relations and some further reaction to the Derek Chauvin, George Floyd trial. There probably will not be any mentions by the President of the United States. There certainly shouldn't be, about current cases like the case in North Carolina, which is attracting so much attention because a suspect who apparently was in his car and trying to get away was shot in the back of the head. It's also a suspect who was being arrested. At least the cops are trying to arrest him based upon a warrant because he was a drug dealer with an extensive record. And are we at the point now in this country where, because of the tilt toward legalized marijuana and legalized weed, that we now sympathize with drug dealers above police officers? Which is not to say that North Carolina doesn't bear investigation. It clearly does. There were a lot of officers there. We still don't know what happened. We will find out, and we will cover that, of course. But I do think it's worthwhile noting that in Detroit, which of course is, I believe, has the highest percentage of African-American citizens of any major city in the country. I mean, Detroit's a clear majority of black voters and black residents. And regarding the so-called George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, there was a fairly remarkable appearance on Newsmax by the police chief in Detroit, whose name is James Craig. And here is what he had to say about some aspects of what the Democrats are touting as their own police reform. It would replace a much better police reform bill that was written by Tim Scott, the Republican from South Carolina. But here's what Detroit Police Chief James Craig had to say, 8A.
You know, I got to tell you where I have a real problem. The whole issue of qualified immunity, that is a deal breaker. I think Tim Scott, what he put on the table was appropriate. It was a balancing act. We know how important it is that police officers who engage in criminal misconduct should be held accountable, and that would be the exemption. But when you talk about civil lawsuits, this will decimate policing as we know it. Mm. This is a veiled attempt, I think, at dismantling policing, because here's what I know. All the way from my seat down, who is going to want to serve in law enforcement when there's no protection? I've talked to my colleagues in other cities. Look at what's happening in New York right now. Mm-hmm. The retirements and resignation rates are skyrocketing.
Okay, look, this is something that is very much worth paying attention to, because the safety of people in the community. By the way, James Craig is a fascinating figure, and boy, he has a lot of guts, because he is, of course, he's African-American, serving a city that is predominantly African-American. He's black. And he also has taken heat in the past for defending Second Amendment rights. And you may say, well, of course, but when you talk to a lot of people in police work, particularly police chiefs, they are not quite as outspoken, as a rule, in defending the Second Amendment as Chief Craig has been. He went on to say this about a lack of control for a vocal minority. Listen to the police chief of Detroit, James Craig.
So this vocal minority is not speaking for people who live in vulnerable communities. That's what's the problem today with everything that's going on. They're voiceless. These folks want good, effective constitutional policing. And the vast majority of men and women who serve each and every day do it right. And a profession shouldn't be painted with a broad brush. But if they remove qualified immunity, there's going to be a mass exodus, and policing will not look like it looks now. They're already trying to take traffic stops away. Knee-jerk reactions. So let's don't stop anybody anymore. The mayor of Brooklyn Center says, well, if they must stop someone, let's use police officers who are not armed. Yeah, there is no such thing as a routine traffic stop.
Okay, he's right, of course. And as Wilford Riley, who's been a guest on this show many times, professor at Kentucky State University, as he pointed out, police officers every single day in the United States make 95,000 stops for traffic violations or potential traffic violations. It's 95,000. And that was in response to the statement at the Oscar ceremony. Statement of the Oscar ceremony that occurred on Sunday night, that police murder three people every day. And most of those people, the overwhelming majority, well over 95% who die, are armed. And they are often fighting with the police. And they are far more commonly white people than they are black people. Okay, so mention the Oscars. A Nomad Land director, Chloe Zhao, from China, made history Sunday night by becoming the first woman of color and the first Chinese woman to win the Oscar for Best Director. Official media, major search engines, and internet censors in her home country are making as if it didn't happen. Ms. Zhao's win, just the second time a woman has walked away with Best Director, unleashed a flurry of congratulatory messages on Chinese social media sites when it was first announced Monday morning, Beijing time. By mid-afternoon, however, nearly all of the posts had been erased. What happened? State broadcaster China Central Television, the official Xinhua news agency, and Communist Party's People's Daily stayed silent on the award throughout the day. Two state media reporters told the Wall Street Journal that they had received orders from China's propaganda ministry not to report on Ms. Zhao's victory, despite what they described as her status as a Chinese national because of previous public opinion. She had said 8 years ago, she had done an interview. She's lived in America since she was a teenager. 8 years ago, she said, China has become a land of lies. She said that in regard to their treatment of Hong Kong. So all of a sudden, there's this Chinese national who actually delivered some words of poetry in Chinese. That at first time that's ever happened at Oscar ceremony. And you'd think, my goodness, the Chinese communists are going to be incredibly proud of her. This is the kind of soft power that they like. Chinese people winning something. This is the power of censorship. When you have a department of propaganda, they even cut off any social media comments at all. Nobody was allowed on social media anywhere in China to say congratulations to Chloe Zhao. Now, why is this worth noting and important? Because this is what government censorship is. Look, I think it stinks that most of the social media in this country, the big companies tend to lean to the left. But if they ban something or some kind of comments or some stream or something like that, okay, it's a private business maybe making a stupid decision. But this is the government with ultimate control over social media, which is one of the reasons that I think it's such a terrible idea through legislation or any other way to increase government control over media. I mean, no, I don't trust the big tech companies, not for a minute. But do I trust the United States government more? Of course not. And the United States government really is prevented by the Constitution from this kind of censorship. It's truly amazing, this entire story. Ms. Zhao experienced a Chinese social media assault of her own this year after a win at the Golden Globes in March. Chinese social media sentiment, initially jubilant about her success, turned bitter after users circulated a 2013 interview. That is nationalism and government censorship at work. Thank God we should continue to be protected from that in this greatest nation on God's green earth.